Pete Rose logged more hits in baseball history than anyone else. No one has come close to breaking his record. But he was also at the center of one of the game's biggest scandals, a scandal that changed baseball forever. In the new book, Charlie Hustle, New York Times bestselling author Keith O'Brien chronicles Pete Rose's spectacular rise and fall. Drawing on firsthand interviews with Rose himself and his associates, this is Pete Rose as we've never seen him before. By Charlie Hustle, available wherever books are sold.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. Richard Glossop has been on death row for 2 decades. Many believe he was not the man involved in a murder. Attorney Don Knight has been working on this case for many years. KRMG's Russell Mills asked Knight to update the case.
Can you kind of give us a little bit of background about who Richard Glossop is and how this whole mess got started?
Sure. Richard Glossop was a motel operator, manager of the Best Budget Inn in Oklahoma City in 1996. When in January 1997, the owner of that motel, whose name is Barry Van Treese, was murdered at the motel on January 7th, 1997. The police focused in on the guy who actually did the killing. It wasn't very hard to figure out what actually happened, that the man who actually did the killing was a man named Justin Sneed. He also worked at that motel as a maintenance man for Mr. Van Treese. He went missing pretty quickly, and the police, for reasons that I still don't really understand, decided to focus on Rich as being somebody who was involved in the murder, even though there wasn't really any evidence that he was. About 10 days after the murder had taken place, they caught Justin Sneed, turned himself in. He went back to working for this roofing company that he had been working with. And it was a really bad interrogation. And you can go and see the interrogation video. It's now available online at SaveRichGlossop.com. But in that video, you can see that the police are asking Sneed. They start out by asking him sort of what happened. And Sneed lies a couple of times, says he doesn't really know what happened. You know, then he kind of alludes to the fact that he kind of knows what happened and knows he was involved. And then the police just out of the blue drop Rich's name and say, well, we've got Rich. We know Rich was involved in this. And they basically steer Sneed for the rest of the time in this interrogation to put Rich's name into this situation. And they came up with this sort of theory or idea that Rich paid Sneed to kill Van Treese. It was a convoluted story from the start. It was the allegation essentially was that Rich gave Van Treese $4,000 to $6,000 at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the 7th, and then hired Sneed to kill Van Treese so that Rich could split that $4,000 to $6,000 just a few hours later. Obviously, for anybody looking at it, they would have said, wow, why didn't he just keep all the money himself and not have to kill anybody to get it? But this was the story the police went with, and it really never really had any basis. In fact, the only evidence they ever had against Rich was Sneed and his lies.
Okay, let me pause for a second, make sure I've got my head wrapped around this. So Justin Sneed works at this motel in Oklahoma City. Richard Glossop is the manager. Justin Sneed is what, some kind of maintenance guy or something?
Right.
And the owner is Barry Van Treese. Barry Van Treese gets clubbed to death with a baseball bat. Everybody is of the same accord that this was Sneed that bashed his head in and killed him. The guy admits that he did it, correct?
That's right. That's right. No one says Rich Glossop was in that room.
Okay. And the only person who has said that Richard Glossop somehow or for whatever reason may have hired him to do this is Sneed, who gets a deal and does not face a death penalty. Where is he at these days? Is he still in prison? Is he out? What's his story? Sneed.
He bargained away for a life sentence at a medium security facility. There's a facility in Oklahoma that's generally considered the softest facility, DLC facility in Oklahoma, and he is there for the rest of his life.
Okay, so he's serving life without parole, but in a not a maximum security super high prison.
Exactly.
Okay. Meanwhile, Mr. Glossop goes on trial for murder based solely on Mr. Sneed's statements. He is convicted and sentenced to death in 1998. And then 3 years later, a unanimous ruling by the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals overturns the conviction.
That's right. He had a very poor defense, almost no defense, in his first trial. The Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals found that there was ineffective assistance of counsel and turned the conviction over.
So he goes to trial again in 2004, and he is again convicted and sentenced to death, again based largely, if not solely, on the only evidence that the police have, which is this confession from Sneed.
Well, it was kind of remarkable because the second trial turned out to be sort of a different theory from the prosecution than the first trial. The first trial was sort of this idea that Rich was going to split the money with Sneed. The second trial, the prosecution brought out some information that they said, and it was really just a spreadsheet that was created by somebody in the prosecution team or the victim's family. I don't know who prepared the spreadsheet, but the allegation was that Rich had been embezzling money for the year prior to the murder, and that somehow the Van Treese family had discovered this embezzlement, and Rich knew he was going to be fired, and then he thought it would be better if he killed Van Treese, because if he killed Van Treese, then he could become the owner of the motel.
How's that work?
I don't know.
Was the theory that somehow he was going to be willed the hotel? I don't get it.
I didn't either, and I don't get it to this day. I am simply telling you what the prosecution put forward.
Gotcha.
The problem with the second trial, which was no real different than the first trial, is Rich never had any real lawyers in that trial either. There was no defense that was put up. We have interviewed more than 40 witnesses that we have found that are good witnesses, and many of whom we will be calling once we get a chance to have a hearing on this case, that were never interviewed by the prosecution nor the defense. The defense did almost no investigation in the second trial at all. We went ahead and hired a forensic accountant who looked at the financial documents that supposedly underpinned this theory that even you look at and say, wait a minute, how did that happen? And when the forensic accountant looked at the papers, she said, there was no embezzlement here. There is no way that you could say that any of these documents establish an embezzlement. And in fact, there was even a glaring mathematical error on the document that was given that was never even pointed out to the jury by the defense or the prosecution. So we basically showed that this idea that there was an embezzlement was simply had no basis in fact. And then, of course, if you throw out the idea that there was no embezzlement, because Rich was actually running the motel pretty much like Barry wanted to. He had gotten bonuses in the 11 of the previous 12 months before this homicide. He was running that motel exactly as Barry wanted that motel ran. And so there was no embezzlement. Without the idea of there being an embezzlement, there would have been no reason for Rich to believe he was going to be fired. And if he didn't believe he was going to be fired, why would he want to kill Barry Van Treese?
Do you have any theories as to why Mr. Sneed would have wanted to kill Barry Van Treese?
Yes, it's a simple story, and it's an easy story to tell, and it's obviously the only one that really mattered. We uncovered information that Justin Sneed was a very heavy meth user. He had progressed to the point where he was injecting methamphetamine, and that's sort of the end stage of that. Once you start injecting methamphetamine, you are all about the drug. There's we found a witness, and if you go to a documentary called Killing Richard Glossop, which is available on some streaming services. There was a documentary done, and you'll see one of our witnesses there who talks about the fact that there was a girl in the room with Justin Sneed. That is something that a witness in the room next to room 102 had told the police the night of the murder that he had heard a girl in the room. It appears that the two of them, who were high on methamphetamine, hatched this plan to steal money. Everybody knew that Barry Ventries carried a lot of cash with him. They hatched a plan to steal the money, they went into the room to steal that money. I don't know if she was in there before or how that worked out, but the bottom line was at about 2 or 3 in the morning on January 7th, their intention was, and it appears that it was the intention, just to steal the money. A baseball bat was taken in by Sneed, but I don't think that he planned necessarily to kill. I think he planned to rob, and things went bad from there, and he beat Barry Ventries to death with that baseball bat.
So Mr. Glossop gets convicted a second time, again, based on what seems to be pretty flimsy evidence for a death penalty case. Just, again, I'm just eyeballing it here. And
you have to understand that Rich had never had a previous felony conviction.
Right.
There's no violence in his history at all.
Had he had any criminal past? Did he have any kind of felony record?
No.
Okay. So
he went from zero to the death
penalty. Okay, so 2014, we move into the next phase of this incredibly complex and bizarre story, and that's when Oklahoma has to basically put the kibosh on its execution system because of lawsuits about whether or not it's, you know, cruel and unusual. Governor Fallon at the time had. Well, we ran out of execution drugs. They tried to change the drugs. Meanwhile, this guy's been told, okay, you're going to be executed on such and such a date. And then they get close to the day and go, oh, no, never mind. We're going to execute you on this date. How many times has this man been given a date and told he was going to die?
Actually, how this happened was Oklahoma killed Clayton Lockett in 2014, and that was a very well-publicized botched execution, or was a very difficult death for Mr. Lockett. They tried to change their protocols during that year of 2014. Rich received a pardon and parole board hearing at the end of 2014, which was denied. And at that hearing, he did not say, I'm sorry that I killed Barry Ventries. Please forgive me and give me a chance. He said, you know, I'm sorry for the Ventries family. I'm sorry for their pain. I'm sorry for their loss, but I did not kill Barry Ventries. I had nothing to do with his death. So even in the face of that looming execution, Rich, knowing well that would be his last opportunity, still said, I didn't do this, because that's been his story and his truth throughout this entire process. But as we moved into 2015, there was a date set in January 2015, shortly after Charles Warner was executed. Rich moved up to become the next one up. Sister Helen Prejean got involved in the case. There were petitions that were signed, and the Supreme Court granted a stay of execution so that Oklahoma could work out this execution protocol that they had. By June 30th of 2015, the Supreme Court had ruled in Glossop v. Gross that Oklahoma could go ahead and kill Rich with the protocol that they had. We were deep into the innocence investigation at that time, and in mid-September, we presented a petition to the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals on the eve of his second execution date, and Rich was within 3 hours of the execution on that September 15th date, when the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals granted a stay of execution so that the people could respond to our petition for his innocence. That was denied on the 30th. The 2 of the 5 justices on the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals said that we should have a hearing based on the new evidence that we presented, but you needed 3 of the 5 in order to get that hearing. And the other 3 judges went with something called the finality of judgment. It's been long enough, in other words. And they set the 3rd execution date. That execution date was set for September 30th at 3 o'clock. At 3:45 p.m., they told Rick they had the wrong drugs and they wouldn't kill him on that day. And the moratorium followed from that.
So 45 minutes after he was supposed to be executed, they said, yeah, we don't have the right drugs. I mean, that right there seems cruel and unusual to me.
They never told him anything. He sat pacing in a small cell just feet from where the execution chamber was, in nothing but boxer shorts, and nobody told him anything during that period of time.
All right. So this is, again, this was in 2015?
Yeah, 2015.
So 5 years later, let me ask you this. How did you get involved in this case, Richard?
Sister Prejean, I told you, is a friend of mine. She wrote Dead Man Walking. I don't know if you know who she is.
Yes, she is known internationally as an opponent to the death penalty. Yes.
Exactly. She's a friend of mine, and I'm here in Littleton, Colorado, and she called me knowing that I do death penalty work. And when she had heard about Rich's case, he had called her and asked her to be his spiritual advisor prior to the first execution. And she said, there's an innocent man on death row in Oklahoma, and you have to come and help. And so I've been involved in this case ever since.
And when was that?
Oh, she called me, I think, in late 2014. I wasn't able to get seriously involved until spring of 2015.
Okay. And then in 2017, and you mentioned this, there was a documentary made called Killing Richard Glossop.
That's right.
It's the Investigation Discovery Channel, if you're not familiar with that. My wife watches it a lot. She watches it all the time. So she's probably seen this documentary. ID, by the way, is sort of a part of the Discovery Channel family, if you will. That documentary arched some eyebrows, but I'm wondering, has it had any kind of impact legally, and what is next for Richard?
Well, the thing is, I remember making a statement to some press back in 2015 that if Governor Fallon would just give me more time, I'd find more witnesses. And, you know, by not because she wanted it, but just by the way the fates worked out here, I got more time, and we have found more witnesses. We've been working on this case ever since, continuing our innocence investigation, and we have more evidence now. And the ID show, it's a Joe Berlinger show. He's an acclaimed filmmaker. It's really quite a good, I think, 4 hours. Tells a pretty good story here in what people have told me is a balanced way. It's not like it's some kind of hit job at all on the death penalty. It's the story of what happened here as told at that time. Like I said, that was done in 2016. So, you know, we have more evidence of that now, but we've continued to do our work in this case. We will be prepared to present this either to the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals or, and more likely, I think, to the Pardon and Parole Board this time, to show and really tell the story that's never been told for Rich, the full story. The things that should have been done way back in 1996, had he had lawyers who could do the kind of work that needs to be done if you're going to defend somebody in a death penalty case.
So do you have a date, or are you still waiting to hear if you're going to have a hearing, or does he have another execution date set?
Right now, there are no execution dates set. Recently, the Pardon and Parole Board had come out in the press, had stated that they were going to give every single person, I think there are now more than 20 or maybe even more than 25 men on Oklahoma's death row who have exhausted all of their appeals, and there is nothing standing between them and the execution date than this Pardon and Parole Board. And they, the members of the board, all of whom are different now than they were in 2015, have said that they will give every single person a fair hearing in front of the Pardon and Parole Board because of the changed circumstances in Oklahoma since then with regard to the death penalty. From what I can tell, it seems like these are very thoughtful and diligent people. I've been very impressed with the statements that I've been hearing so far from these people, that they really intend to really vet these cases in a way that perhaps never was done before. And so we are looking forward to that opportunity in Rich's case.
Attorney Don Knight, special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interview. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.